Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Michael Janz, co-founder of Agency Revolution, where we automate your systems, engage your customers, and help you grow your agency. And I want to welcome you to this episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast, where it's our job to find the geniuses, innovators, movers, and shakers in the insurance industry and discern and deconstruct what they do to help you grow your agency faster. And I'm excited about this conversation. I'm really happy to share this with you. And to some extent, maybe this represents an oversight on my part. As you may know, I recently published my annual State of the Industry report. The Death of the Old School Agent, The Rise of the New Marketing Master is the title of it. And in that, I covered what I believe are the four forces that are so powerful that every agent broker simply needs to strategically respond to them, not just tactically. And so it is, to some extent, it's I think it's presented as a guidebook, a guide for strategy for success in 2018. And it's possible I overlooked a force that's very, very powerful. Also in the report, I identified two other forces that I think we all need to keep our finger on the pulse of. Well, here's another one. Neil Stanley is, he knows more about this than anybody else. He's one of those rare people who is, he's just clearly at the top of the field. He was an attorney. And then an insurance company CEO three times. And then he was a principal of a network. And we talk about what a network is. You can call them clusters, and they go by lots of different names. But they really have already really transformed the landscape of the insurance industry. And by Neil's representation, they're not stopping. They're going to continue to grow and continue to change the industry. So we cover this force. I felt that it was too important not to, that I just had to bring more awareness to the way that this is transforming the insurance industry. So here's who I encourage should listen to this. Anybody who's in a network should periodically reflect on their membership in the network. Anybody who's thinking about joining some kind of a network of, you know, where other members are your peers or sometimes your competitors in the industry, where you have gathered together or have been gathered together for various purposes like market access, perhaps contingency protection, perhaps other services and things that we talk about in some specificity in this conversation. So essentially, this is about what you need to know about networks, how networks are providing different solutions. And then at the end of the conversation, I ask Neil, who's clearly worked with thousands of agencies over his career, what he thinks separates the winners and the losers today. And he provided a four-step plan that I think, frankly, everybody should listen to. I will provide a very, very brief afterward if you want to hang with me after my interview with Neil. Again, very, very brief. Just have one thing I want to say, but now I want to move on with the podcast. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to introduce you to Neil Stanley, who is the consultant to all of the networks. And I think is clearly the go-to guy and knows more about what networks are doing, how they're operating, and where they're going than anybody on the planet. Neil Stanley. Neil Stanley, thrilled to have you in this podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Michael, it's wonderful to talk to you again. I always enjoy our conversations, and I'm looking forward to telling you and the audience a little bit more about networks.
Yeah, so this is the reason that I'm so excited about this conversation is because I try to keep my finger on the pulse of trends and forces that are changing the industry. And when I wrote my State of the Industry report, quite candidly, I did not include this as a major trend, but clearly I probably should. So let's consider this maybe an amendment to my report, because I think what you're observing and what you participate in is, it's just too important to ignore. So before we get you agree.
I agree with you, Michael.
I know.
Really, it really is a tremendously important area, and it's going to become more important as the years go on. A little bit of my background. I started in this business, if you can believe it, 45 years ago as a corporate attorney, and ended up the industry's been wonderful for me.
Right.
I was very, very fortunate. I became a CEO of three different insurance companies, and after that stint, I went over to the agency side, worked there for a while, and then opened up my own consulting firm. And one of my clients was what is affectionately known as a cluster, and we'll get into that a little bit more. And ultimately, I ended up joining them as one of their principals, and we ended up building that into one of the largest networks in California in the West Coast. And we sold it a couple of years ago. We sold it. I still consult with that company, and mm-hmm. I also consult with a number of other networks. In addition to that, we started a couple of, I won't call them associations because they're not associations.
Right.
But there are many networks out there, and we'll get into that a little bit more later. And we have two different groups that come together a couple times a year and talk about common problems, common opportunities among the principals that are part of networks. So it's an ever-expanding new discipline and new distribution system.
Okay, let's kind of put a definition around it. I think we hear a lot of terms. Clusters is one of them. And then, you know, we hear about a lot of these organizations, and I'm not even sure if people know what to call them. So,
it's interesting. It's very interesting, Michael, about that, because we didn't know what to call ourselves. You know, these started off, the group that I was involved with in California was one of the pioneers, and they started in the early 1980s.
Right.
There were a number of what was called then clusters.
Right.
And they normally were set up with a group of small agents who wanted to get together to be able to compete with larger brokers and also be able to get some more favorable terms with the insurance companies. And I remember when we worked together on that, we started talking about, we don't like the word cluster.
Right.
We don't like the word aggregator. So why don't we try something different? And we came up with the word network. And network is really a group of agencies. And it can be small. It can be four or five agencies that work together and have all our individually owned,
mm-hmm.
And come together, or it can be up to thousands of different agencies involved in that. And the interesting thing is that these agencies, for the most part, most networks do not own the agencies that participate in them. The agencies are owned by and retain the individual ownership of the principals in those agencies, and they come together in various forms to work together to enhance the opportunities both for the agency and for the clients, and also for the carriers that, that support them.
But there are those there are some where there is some ownership, right, or maybe a shared ownership. Yeah. So I guess what I'm getting at is there's no single recipe for networks.
No, there's not. I can pretty much define them into groupings.
Okay.
Some operate more like co-op, where each one of the member agencies owns a share or an equal number of shares in the network itself. Some are, and those are normally not for profit. They normally redistribute all of the, all of the agencies get their full commissions, and they redistribute all profit sharing or contingent income that they may receive through the network. There are others that are for profit, where they have a separate management, and often those are also owned by the agencies.
Right.
But they don't redistribute all of the contingent income. They normally give back all of the commission, but they don't redistribute they redistribute some of the profit sharing or contingent commission, and some is retained by the individual network. And then there are a few that all operate on one operating system. So normally, with most networks, the individual agencies have their own operating platform, whether it's Wyatt or Vertafore or any of the others. And there are a few networks that have one system. One in particular that I know of in the Northeast that's very successful.
Right.
And they all operate on one Vertafore system. General common.
So lots of different shapes and sizes, and at least one thing in common, which is that there's a pooling of the premium, right? And that there is access to carriers through that network, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Normally what happens is the carrier has a master contract with the network.
Uh-huh.
And then each one of the agencies have a sub-agency appointment inside of that. So there's a master and sub-agency into that. And then the premiums normally get rolled up for contingent purposes or any other incentive compensation that may be paid to the group.
All right.
There are some also, I forgot to mention this earlier, but there are also a number that are basically market access. So you join them and you access market, but they don't provide any services.
Got it. Do you consider them to be, I suppose they're a network, but I tend to think of that as an aggregator. So I'm curious.
Yes, I'm talking
to the industry expert now. Do you see a difference in the definition between networks and aggregators?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Personally, I do. And I call them more preferred market wholesalers.
Okay.
That would be the aggregator terminology that I would use.
Right. And there are a lot of those as well.
There are. there are many. And they really provide a great service mostly to small, very small independent agents who cannot access carriers because they just don't have enough premium to be able to get an appointment.
Got it. Okay.
So that's those types of things. And normally what happens there is the market access company takes a portion of the commission.
Uh-huh.
And the balance of the commission is sent back to the individual agent, normally just like a wholesaler.
Got it. All right. So there are these networks, as you said. There's some that are very small, like four or five agencies that have some common interest and some level of trust. They get together so that perhaps it does increase their market access because Bob's got this carrier and Nancy's got that carrier. So now there's, some more access, and perhaps there is some increased contingency or at least protection of stability of the contingent income. But then we've also got a lot of these that have a professional staff. Sometimes it might be one person who kind of functions like an executive vice president and manages relationships. But sometimes there's a considerable staff whose purpose is to do a number of things, like add value.
Correct.
Okay.
And that's really, you know, we'll get into this that portion of the conversation about adding value. But the larger networks, and there are networks that are $7-8 billion in size,
right,
as far as premium
right.
is concerned. And there are many that, and there are some that are up in the $2-3 billion range.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, you're going from a network that perhaps has 50 to 70 million dollars in premium under management to billions.
Right.
And it's growing. These networks are growing very, very rapidly.
Why?
Why?
Yes. Why?
For the reasons that, you know, it's a question that, you know, can be answered in a number of different ways. This really started off as more, as I said earlier, trying to get more access and getting a little bit more clout. And really what's becoming now is that you have agencies that just basically need to have more communication with other agencies on a protected basis so that they feel comfortable talking to Fred and Susie and John that are somewhere else out there.
Right.
They want to be able to have a degree of, you know, it's got a difficult risk. I want to place that risk. What do I do with it? You know, how do I work with that? They want to be able to have, you know, common problems shared and opportunities discussed. They want to be able to access more carriers, as I said earlier.
Right.
They want better contracts. They really feel that, you know, there's not a lot of, and this may, the big guy and PIA may feel differently about this, but, you know, they're really, those two organizations are struggling for new members. And most of them have explored market access kinds of programs if they haven't got them in place. Because most agencies today really need help in managing their agency and finding ways to help it grow and expand. And that's what a good network can do. And a good network can really help an agency do exactly those kinds of things. So the value of them, once you come into a network, very, very rarely will you leave one as an agency.
Okay, so this
is the value of that is tremendously important to you.
This is the super juicy stuff. So, and I'm assuming that this is one of the reasons that networks have had staying power in the industry, why they're growing, and why agencies generally don't leave, because they're getting something from it that they did not get when they were isolated and on their own.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay.
Absolutely. And so, you know, as I said earlier, it's very, very difficult. Once an agency is in a network, they depend on that. They depend on the market access that they're going to have. They depend on the relationships they're able to build. And it becomes critically important for not just them individually and the ownership of their agency, but for the customers and clients that they have. They need that diversity of market to be able to offer the best possible product to their customers. So it becomes critically important. You just can't move out of one once you're in one.
Got it.
And you know, the interesting thing also, Michael, we look at what's going on in the marketplace today with all of the acquisitions that are going on with private equity.
Yeah, you and I talked about that recently.
Yeah, we did. And they're really networks in themselves.
Well, so talk for a moment about that, because that is one of the trends that I recognized and acknowledged as something we need to keep our finger on the pulse of in my State of the Industry address. And, you know, the number of them has mushroomed since, you know, probably in the last 5 years, certainly in the last 10. They're making acquisitions weekly. And mentally, it's been easy for me to say, well, there's clusters, and then there's these private equity groups. And
right,
you know,
I would lump them together.
Got it. Okay.
You know the private equity groups, now they own all the agencies.
They own the agencies, and they probably they probably on the horizon. The intention is to flip it to a bigger private equity firm.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So
there are economic reasons why they're doing what they're doing.
Right.
Aside from the interrelationship, but a lot of the things that they build, the value that they have, not just the ongoing value that they provide the agencies, is very similar to what a network will have. And if you've got a good private equity company that's out there managing and help managing a group of agencies, they're doing the same thing that a good network will do, and vice versa. So they're very similar in design.
All right.
And the interesting thing is, as I found out for years, you go to the large carrier events for their top agents, and lo and behold, who's there? All of the networks,
right.
Big networks are there, and the big private equity firms or the big brokers are there.
Right.
That's the preponderance of people at these national events.
All right.
But we can get into that a little bit more later.
Yeah, well, so let's, there's a quote from Michael Porter, the sort of godfather of strategy that I know I've referenced in this podcast series at least once, and I paraphrase it and probably mangle it, but essentially what he says is lacking strategic value or lacking unique value in the marketplace, some companies merely grow by buying others. And then they're still standing there without unique strategic advantage. One of the questions I have is, other than size, which has some merit in and of itself, I mean, clearly, if you have size, you've got negotiating strength with carriers, et cetera, et cetera. What kinds of things do you see that excite you, that you think are value add for the agency or for the end user, the insured?
It goes back to what I was talking about a little bit earlier, Michael. The real value. So if I sat down this morning and I'm going to be leading a panel discussion.
Yeah.
Client that I'm working with. And that discussion is going to hit on issues such as growth. It's going to hit on issues such as how do you manage get more younger people involved in the business? How do you work remotely? Technology, how do you embrace technology inside of your agency? All of those things. How do you make your agency more valuable? So, you know, perpetuation. How are you going to perpetuate your agency? Have you thought about that as an agency owner? And what steps do you need to do to implement such a strategic plan to perpetuate? All of those things and many, many others are critical questions for an agency, and they can be answered by a network who's willing to spend the time to do that. And most larger networks do exactly that. So they spend a lot of time on it in getting involved in it. And I know with the smaller networks that I consult with, they have the same exact questions. And so if you're looking out in over, say, the next 5 years, I can see some consolidation of networks.
Really?
Smaller networks being consolidated into larger networks. I don't see a lot of changes I don't see any saying, no, I don't really want to be part of a network. There are a number of agencies I've met with say, well, I don't think I'm ready for it yet. But on the other hand, I have met with some very large independent agents.
Yeah.
15 to 20 million in revenue size.
Uh-huh.
Who you'd think don't need markets, don't need, and they are interested in what's all about, what's this network
okay.
all about? Maybe we should consider that, because I need to be able to give my clients a broader opportunity in the marketplace. That's critically important. So you go back to the individual client that's coming into a brokerage or an agency. They want to be able to be given the top level of professional advice and a price and coverage that's going to fit with their particular needs. That's what's critically important, and it's becoming more and more important as things go on. Technology. How are you going to embrace technology inside your agency?
Right.
How are you going to respond to the individual customer who's, you know, they're technologically savvy at this particular point in time? What do you do to change your agency to make it more friendly for them? How do you compete against InsurTech and all of the things that are going on there? How do you embrace some of the things that are going on in InsurTech? All of these questions need to be answered. The only place they're going to get answered is inside of a network.
Got it. All right. So one of my questions was going to be, what kind of an agency joins a network? But I think you've already said, well, size is irrelevant, right? They can be small, they can be medium, they can be large.
They all have different needs. One of those groups.
Yeah.
They have different needs, and you have to respond as a network. You need to respond to those needs, but that's true.
It seems to me that one of the objections or one of the sources of resistance to joining a network is that the historically independent insurance agent feels that they have to sacrifice something.
Yes.
Talk about that.
You know what? There are two different things. One is the key one, perhaps, is I am going to have to give up my agency appointment. I've had an agency appointment with the Hartford for 25 years.
Right.
I'm going to have to give up my agency appointment.
But my dad had it. My grandfather had it.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's a concern.
Yeah. It's a family heirloom.
Okay. And they say, if I'm going to leave, then, am I going to be able to get that appointment back? Well, the answer is maybe. But the other part of that answer is once you're in, you ain't going to get out. But it's getting over that level of resistance and becoming, more and more agencies, their friends are part of networks, and they are comfortable about getting more and more comfortable about giving up that agency appointment that they had. They still get one. It's just a sub-agency appointment under the master code. But then there's the other is the economic part of it. Most agency networks require some type of fee.
Mm-hmm.
Some are very small. Those are the co-op type of group there. That fee is normally very small.
Right.
The others are a little bit more substantial, but none to the point that you're going to break the bank of an agency. That normally can be overcome by talking about the value that you're going to get besides just the cost of getting market access. So all of the other values that come into that. And all networks struggle and work hard because they do need to grow.
Right.
They do need to expand. You made the comment earlier that size may not matter. Yes, I disagree with that. Size does matter.
Mm-hmm.
It matters a lot. You get your seat at the table with a carrier. You need to produce premium for them. There's no question about
that. I'm curious about that. How would you describe the carrier segment of the industry's response or perspective or attitude towards networks? They're so big. They have to be. Attention
really
must be paid.
I'll tell you a story, and I'm going to leave the names out of this story. But one large national carrier executive. You remember I told you about the groups that are getting together, the groups of networks that are getting together,
right?
And he refers to them as the unions.
Okay.
So,
you're a union organizer, Neil.
Yeah. So there is concern about that. But, the interesting thing is, if we talk about networks are a different distribution system. They're not. It's a different word for a distribution system, but they can really. If an insurance carrier works with a network properly, that can really enhance and grow the new business that they want to write, especially in small commercial business and focused other focused commercial lines as well as personal lines. So, you know, what I have found is that the attitude toward networks has changed significantly over the last probably 5 to 7 years. And those carriers that are embracing this distribution system are really beginning to see the results of that. And I'm not going to go into talking about the names of the carriers that have or those that have not. But I can see that this is going to change. I have sat down with CEOs of companies that don't want to get involved with networks at all, that believe very strongly in their individual agency appointments and the way they do it, and they're successful at that. But most of the carriers that I've dealt with, both on a national and regional level, are moving more quickly, more effectively in dealing with networks and finding ways in which they're going to be able to manage them and expand their business effectively and grow. It's definitely changing.
All right. My next question is I'm asking for advice on behalf of at least some of our listeners. Over the years, I've had hundreds of clients who were members of one form of a network or another, teeny ones, medium ones, big ones, and generally they're very proud of the network in which they participate. I do remember one conversation with a longtime client who wished that he made a different decision. And it seems that there are a lot of different choices out there, all different flavors of networks. What are the things that an agent should evaluate or analyze to help them make the right decision?
That's a really good question, because and I think it's very important. I always, you know, first of all, you've got to look at the motivation of the individual agency. If you're just looking, if you're a very small agency, you're looking for market access, you need to be able to get more market and for your clients, you're probably going to be more interested in a network that's their primary focus. Small agencies that they need to expand and they need to grow, and they can work with them. The agencies that are larger, and I, you know, large is a relatively relative term, but let's just assume that it's maybe $750 to $1 million of revenue in an agency and up. You know, that particular group is not just looking for access to more market, but they're also looking for the value added that a network is going to provide.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to ask questions, what else do you do
besides
just give me access to 8 additional markets that I don't have right now? How are you going to help me with my perpetuation plan? How are you going to help me grow my agency and grow the value of my agency? How are you going to help me get new producers? Because I really need to be able to get new producers. What are you going to do to help me with those particular things? How do I network in with all of the other agencies that are part of your network? What do you do? Do you have meetings? Do you have seminars? Do you provide programs that I can access exclusively to your particular network?
Right.
All of those questions are critically important inside of that. The other ones that I think are important is, if I don't like this, how do I get out?
Right. Okay.
So, you know, that's a critical part. Some networks make it very, very difficult for you to get out. Others, you know, you just you tell them you want to leave, and that's okay. You can leave. That's a critical thing to look at. You also need to look at the contract that they've got. Each one has contracts. Each one of those contracts is different. As far as how you're going to share the contingent income, how you're going to share incentive income, how are you going to be billed? Who has control over those particular things? What happens if I have a problem with a carrier? Are you going to be able to help me with that problem? Or am I left off on my own? What does your staff look like? Are they people who really understand what's going on, or are they just a whole bunch of financial people that can't really help me on a professional level? All of those questions need to be asked. And I'm finding that in the networks that I work with, are most of those are networks that cater to that size 750 and up agency. They all provide those levels of services. They're very candid about what they can do and they can't do, and they show the agency that's the prospect of what their value is. But you have to ask questions. Just don't go into it. I want market access. I don't care what's going to happen, because ultimately, if you're in the wrong network, you won't be happy, and then you sometimes are stuck. And frankly, in what I've talked about with most network managers, they really don't try to take members out of other networks. Some do, some move.
Right.
But very rarely does that happen. You're basically competing for the agent that has not yet moved.
Right. Okay. In a moment, Neil, I'm going to ask you to share how either people can find, maybe reach out to you. That may not be what you want, because your clients are networks, not the thousands of agencies who perhaps want to join networks. So I'll at least ask how they can learn more. Before I do that, I have one more question for you. You've worked with so many agencies, probably more directly when you were a principal in a network, but certainly you've seen over the decades, you've seen agencies thrive and grow, and of course, you've seen agencies struggle and get stuck. What do you think is the difference in behavior, maybe philosophy, approach to the market? What's the difference between those who are, regardless of network participation? I'm asking you to set that one aside for a moment. What is it? What are the behaviors of the most successful agencies today?
Okay, and you and I have talked about this on other occasions.
Yeah.
This is critically important. The most important thing, I feel, is have a plan. Know where you're going to go. Don't wake up every morning and just respond to whatever calls you up on the phone or the client that's got a problem. But make sure you've got a plan that's going to look out there in 5 years, so that you know kinds of things that are going on inside of your agency and how you have to respond to that. How are you going to grow? How are you going to expand? How are you going to perpetuate? All of those things need to be inside of a plan. So just sit down, spend a couple of days with your key people or with your partners, and come up with a plan of how you where you want your agency to go and how you want it to go, and then how are you going to implement it in that process. There are lots of books out there to be able to do that. There are lots of opportunities to be able to do it. But really, all you've got to do is sit down, think about it, write it out, and put it together. The second thing, grow. If you don't grow, you're going to die. I mean, we've heard that over and over again, but it's the truth. I mean, if you lose 10% of your clients on for any reason, for attrition on an annual basis, then that's going to occur.
Right.
At the end of 10 years, you're going to be out of business. And that doesn't make any sense at all. So you have to grow. So you're going to have to find new producers to bring into your firm, because you can't do it all by yourself.
Right.
And you're going to have to be able to find the markets to be able to do that. And that goes back to the plan. How are you going to plan? How are you going to do that? What are you going to do to grow? Third thing, make sure that you understand technology. Embrace technology. Embrace the kinds of things that are going on right now, because they are going to change the industry significantly. Have a website. Make it work for you. Make sure that you've got some young people in your agency that really enjoy right. doing those kinds of things if you don't enjoy doing it. But embrace that. Don't be afraid to change, because you've got to change. I mean, the industry is changing very rapidly. You've got to be able to change with it. And finally, and probably not finally, there are probably four or five other
Well,
things.
Okay. This is I'm taking notes here. You know when Neil talks, I take notes. So item four. Item four.
The next one is professionalism. Come on. You've got to be a professional out there.
Yeah.
The reason that most of the your client is coming to you is for your advice. So you have got to stay up mm-hmm. on top of whatever products and services that you're selling. So make sure you understand that. Continue your education. Don't rely on just price to be able to do that. You have got to, because you, believe me, I've seen it too many times. I've run agencies as well. And when an agent relies on just quoting on price, they're going to lose that account probably in 2 or 3 years.
Well said.
Because someone else with a lower price is going to come in.
Right.
Or less coverage. And you've got to be able to determine that someone else is coming in for a lower price. 9 times out of 10, they're cutting the coverage that you have. So you've got to be able to explain that to the individual customer that you're working with. So it's critically important that you do that. But plan, grow, perpetuate, embrace technology, and be a professional.
Be a pro.
Those are probably the key things inside of managing an agency, and that's where every successful agency I've seen and worked with, that's what they've been doing.
Thank you for answering that question. I loved that your 4-point plan there. That made this podcast. That's a double header. So I got two burgers on one bun.
I'm glad I could help, Michael.
All righty. So Neil, if I have to leave this one up to you, you probably don't want agencies contacting you directly. That's my wild guess, but if they, I'll let you decide.
That's a correct guess.
That's the correct guess.
I've been in this business for 45 years. I'd like to be able to play golf every once in a while.
Yeah, okay.
So, no, I don't want to talk to a lot of agents.
All righty. However, if they want to learn more about networks, what should they do?
Well, I'm working with two organizations now.
Right.
One organization especially is going to come out with a lot more material on networks so that individual agents can learn more about them. But the other things, there are a number of articles that have come out over the last year. AM Best came out with a very good article, and I was actually interviewed for that, late last year, and that came out. Each one of the national publications, industry publications, have come out with articles recently about networks. You can also take a look at the larger networks. Go on their websites. Take a look at who they are, and then go onto the website and see what kind of services they provide. And they're all out there trying to contact you to be able to put you into a network.
You're right. You're right.
You've just got to get online and do that work.
And take, it seems.
And there is a network for everybody.
There is a network for everybody. And it does seem that you endorse the idea of making this a serious decision. In other words, do your homework, do your analysis and research, and then when you make your decision, go all in.
Correct. Correct.
All right.
And examine the alternatives. Don't just jump at the first one. Examine what's out there and say, what's the best one for me and my agency?
Neil?
But ultimately the decision, I really feel this, Michael. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, the decision for most independent agencies, for the vast majority of independent agencies, is going to be joining a network.
Wow.
At some point
okay.
in time.
Okay. I should ask, and then I promise I'll bring this to an end because I know you've got a lot of networks to talk to. Do you have any idea what percentage of the American agency system participates in networks now?
That's, I thought you might ask that question. That's been tossed around.
I'm sure it has.
The number that I keep coming back on is about 65%.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Right.
All right.
I was right.
So
for, when you consider the billions and billions of dollars, mm-hmm. of premium dollars, yeah. that are wrapped up inside of networks, I mean, there's one group that I work with, we did it, and this is just seven networks.
Mm-hmm.
That was over $8 billion in premium that the members of those networks wrote.
Yeah.
There's another network that probably in and of itself has $8 billion in it. And then there are a number of others that are in the $2 to $3 billion.
Uh-huh.
So, when you start to talk about the numbers are significant. And that doesn't even count a lot of the small regional networks that are out there. These are mostly larger regional networks or even national networks.
Even national.
That are there. So, yeah, it's big, growing, and will continue to grow.
Neil, as always, been a delightful conversation and an education, and I appreciate you pulling the curtains back and the window open so we can take a look at what is clearly a remarkable force in the industry right now. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Michael. I really always enjoy speaking with you, and I appreciate the opportunity to share some of these thoughts with you and with those that are going to listen to the podcast.
My pleasure. Hello, everybody. Michael Janz with a very brief afterword to the podcast. I made reference to my State of the Industry report, and maybe with some mild embarrassment that I didn't talk about networks as a transforming force in my report. So we consider this podcast, let's say it's an amendment to the report. However, I do think I hit on the four major trends that we all really need to pay attention to. I have been giving it away. I don't sell this. I generally just make this my. I feel some obligation. I'm so blessed by having the conversations with industry thought leaders every single week, and then of course in my network more in between podcasts that I do feel like I have to. I've just got some obligation to synthesize what I'm seeing, what I'm hearing, what I'm reading, what my own personal clients are telling me, what members of our mastermind group are telling me, and synthesize all of that and try to present that as in some sort of guide with a little bit of a blueprint on action. So if you don't have a copy of it yet, I think that Agency Revolution now has published or is about to publish its own version. It's very beautiful. The design work is really beautiful in what they did. And so you might be able to find it on Agency Revolution's site, or perhaps you got an email from them. If not, or if you just want to get one right now, you can email me and I'll send you my version. Same words, just slightly different pictures. Happy to get it to you. As I've said before, I kind of kick myself sometimes, and it takes me a few days to get around to this. It's manual labor. When you email me, it's me, manual labor, in the casita, putting it into an email and sending it back to you. But for those of you who really are hungry about this, first of all, I applaud you. I think that in regards to what separates the winners from the losers, I think clearly we do see that the winners are the ones who are serious students of the industry, period. They pay attention to what's happening. They're willing to read. They're willing to listen. And they act not just tactically, not just jumping from shiny new thing to shiny new thing, but they act strategically and focus on the stuff that really matters. And that's what I attempted to address in my annual State of the Industry report, the title of which is The Death of the Old School Agency, The Rise of the New Marketing Master. So think about that. So if you'd like a copy, email me, michael@agencyrevolution.com. Without further ado, I wish you a terrific day.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.